And I knew from the beginning that I was going to build a business that is investable, right? Because I knew that the power of collaboration can take, you know, your business to the next level, right?
This thing is like a calling. And maybe that's why we are able to stay on it for so long and be able to see it succeed, you know?
Yes.
So, like I said, there is that thing that pushes you when you're not living your purpose. You feel like you're underutilized. You feel like you could do more where you are at. Nothing can stop you.
Yes.
When the time has come for you to move.
Today's conversation, we are talking about building your side hustle and hopefully in the future turning it into your main hustle. We are joined by Nonhlanhla Magubane, who is the managing director and co-founder of Ayami Lifestyle, which is a premium fashion brand. It's important to say that, right? Premium, the premium part is important. And so excited, you know, to have you here because you turned your idea into a profitable business, which is amazing to do. You know, congratulations on everything.
Well, I'm not sure if profitable is the word at this point, but so yes, no, I'm very grateful that I had that insight to start the side hustle and eventually turn it to what it is today, a business.
Yeah. So I want us to go from the beginning, right?
Yes.
So you are a Nonhlanhla who's young, right? 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
You are growing up in the rural areas of KZN.
Wow.
You are fetching water, right? You grew up fetching water.
Yes.
You have goats.
Yes.
Oh, right?
My gosh.
And then you grow up to be a scientist, right? So you go in, you study chemistry.
Yes.
And you work in a lab.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you're a scientist.
Yes.
And now you own a premium fashion brand. Now, how does that happen?
I think all of it comes together when you see the premium brand and how it links to my upbringing.
Yes.
Because that's what brought it together, really. But I think as a child, I was curious. I wanted clearly to be a scientist, and then I got bored.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in the lab for a couple of years as a chemist, and at the time I was working with people that were in sales and marketing. So they would ask and bring stuff in the lab to present to their clients. I would develop it for them.
Mm-hmm.
They would go and present it, and they come back with wins and celebrate in sales. So I really started like envying them. Like I can't be in the lab, and I realized I was also an extrovert. I'm like, maybe the lab thing is not for me. I'm gonna be out of here.
Yes.
Then I started looking around for opportunities in sales and marketing. I then moved into technical sales, but the main thing that brought me to maybe coming here closer was me moving to FMCG. That's the thing that now it was like a second university for me.
Uh-huh.
Being in the FMCG environment, I understood the value chain.
Uh-huh.
I was responsible for selling from the beginning. I understood. Remember, I'm coming from making the product from scratch.
So yes, being in a lab. Yes, being in a lab, you're cooking a product from scratch.
I was cooking a product from scratch. I went to production of the product.
Yes.
I'm now in the selling of the product.
Uh-huh.
And then I understood the value chain now, the movement from when you're selling it to getting into the market.
Yes.
So having spent, I spent a lot of time in FMCG, I was privileged to be in good companies that taught me both between sales and marketing. So I then acquired skills that taught me how to sell, to analyze trends, to determine the product pricing from creation of a product. So I could package a product and sell it. I felt like if I keep doing this for other people, perhaps at some point I can do it for myself. So I then, already feeling entrepreneurial, I wanted to empower myself. In between, I studied, I added postgrad in marketing. So
yes.
I already understood the language. I was comfortable with the sales environment, but I needed more. Remember, I'm coming from a very specialized field.
Science is specialized.
There are things that you think you know, but you don't know when you're coming from a field like that. People can speak in the room, but they can speak over you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was experiencing a lot of that. So I needed the MBA.
Yes.
So that's when then that's the leap. That's what the leap that pushed me in the end. So you know when we do our MBA, most people don't do MBAs. You want to develop yourself. You want to advance your career. You want to start a business. So I had that in mind. So already when I'm ending my MBA, there are three things that were life changing for me that I took out of the MBA session. And I want to leave with your audience tonight.
Yes.
So one of my lecturers said, as you are leaving and you are going to graduate, you're going to make go and start your own business. So here are the things that I need you to look out for. Find something that you are really passionate about, or something that you are really good at. Clearly, I'm really good at this. I've picked up the skills now. So I need to be selling something, right? So park that. So I'm just going to get there.
Yeah.
And what am I passionate about? I want to make an impact. I knew then that I want to make an impact. But I also understood it's much easier to make an impact when you have some power of some sort. So I needed that.
So you needed to be a boss.
sort of. You need a voice.
Yes.
Let's put it there. You need a voice. And you need a platform that will give you that voice. So I needed that. So then obviously comes the idea. So I then knew I was going to start something right there and then. At the time, so now that comes AAMI. At the time in 2016, there was a lot of African prints in the market.
Yes.
They were just flooded. We were wearing African prints. We would go to our, find an aunt that's going to make your item for you to go to a wedding or to go to wherever. Yes. It was like
era,
the trend was like, your time is now. We were self-actualizing as Africans, so we're embracing our identity.
Doing our afros. It was that period.
It was that period of the Duke movement. It was the Duke of the Afro school. So that was happening all at once. So it also links to my chemistry. So I'm saying it adds up. So in chemistry, in science, the things that skills you are given most is critical thinking and analyzing data and pulling out insights.
Yes.
So it's easier for me to connect the dots. I'm not in the fashion industry. I'm not a designer. This is someone who's just interested as an observer. Then I'm observing this trend. I'm like, hold on, man, but why are they called African prints?
Yes.
That's question number one. Because I don't know. Maybe I need to find out why, because I don't know. So I then obviously went on that search, found out they were made in North Africa, and they are made of hard material. So that was the concept. I'm like, all right, what if it was softer? Why must it be harder? Why must African things be harder? It only comes in this material.
Then yes, like with the Ghanaian print, like the Gente, which I absolutely love.
Yes.
Yes, and all the material. And even a shreshwe.
Exactly.
Even shreshwe is also quite hard material. Yes.
So who owns this thing? Why can it not be? That was the question.
Yeah.
And then the second insight was like, hold on. Louis Vuitton is able to, LV can have their
print
on
and
any
Gucci
surface.
On anything, shoes.
So why is this not on any surface? Because I haven't seen it on any surface. Those were the questions in my mind. And then my background comes in now. So I'm from KZN. I'm a Zulu girl. I grew up doing, I'm a
beads.
So it's in me. I'm like, hold on, man. We South Africans love beads, right? What if I create something that looks like Zulu beads? So this that I'm wearing today is our first print. This is our original. We call it original because this is the first print we ever made. Because when I'm not a graphic designer, I am not a designer in terms of clothes. I have a thought. I find someone, then I'm like, maybe someone can draw it for me.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Someone can draw it for me. So I found a graphic designer. After two, okay, the first one didn't work out. Found the one that understood my concept. This was like I was guiding her hand. I need you to do it like this for me. Until she was able to produce something that resembles what I wanted, which is like, because I gave her a picture. Here is the picture. This is how the beads look. They're not lines. They are dots. So I need you to recreate this for me. So that was how I moved. That's how the concept, and that's how AAMI was born.
Yes.
And
yeah. So now, usually when we talk African clothing and stuff, like when I just think about whenever I, you know, and it's different, it's a little bit different now. Back then, when you're looking for a shreshwe, I go down to town, right? That's where I'll find it. And then I find the material and then I go to the lady in the hood to go and make my shreshwe. Whenever I'm looking for the beads, it's somewhere in the streets. Premium brand. How did you choose your target market? How did we go from shreshwe being, the stuff that we sell in the streets to you just going, I want these beads at Mall of Africa at one day at some point?
That was the gap in the market. So I identified that actually, why should you be going through all this trouble? Why are the malls not Afrocentric?
Mm-hmm.
Why can we not bring our own Because we're struggling to buy because it's not in the Afrocentric malls, right? In the malls.
In the malls,
they
yes.
are Eurocentric. The malls are just only, you know.
Yes.
So what if the gap is, let me create something that looks like a lot of people can relate to, right?
In like South African.
And the quality mm-hmm. as well must align with what is in the normal malls or Eurocentric malls as they were, right?
Yes.
So I wanted the quality to match the blouse that you're wearing.
Yes.
Because you can print on the blouse. I
yes.
wanted the quality. I wanted the accessibility so that you don't have to go to the aunt. I also didn't want you to only be stuck with the hard material, right?
Yes.
I want you to have a choice so that you don't have to limit our heritage to only being traditional
for weddings
in the corner. That was the thing. It bothered me. Why is it ours? Why is it ours looking inferior? Why is mm-hmm. it positioned inferior? Because by default, the fact that I have to suffer to get it, I have to go to an aunt, mm-hmm. I can't simply just go and buy it and wait any other time I choose to wear it. I can't wait like this, right? I have to now, it has to be a certain way. So that was the gap I was trying to close in the market. That's how I then moved. So I understood that people like yourself who
yes.
can afford my target market are struggling. They have to go and park their car somewhere in small streets in town
yes.
to find whatever they're looking for. But they live right here in Waterfall.
Yes.
So I need to bring it to them.
To them in Waterfall.
Just like they normally walk there to buy things, they should pass by and see mine
and
choose mine. That
yes.
was the thing. But it must be the quality of the mall.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you know, speaking of that, you didn't start at Mall of Africa. Right? That's
yeah.
not where the way it happened. You didn't just like, oh, I'm creating this thing and then here's a store at Mall of Africa. When I first got introduced to the brand, and I think this was like 2018,
yes.
and I remember seeing these navy blue dresses
yes.
that had like a strip of these prints, and
yes.
I just thought, oh, this is something I could totally wear.
Yeah.
Right? Because I was, oh, dresses for work, you know,
yes.
and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And you were selling online.
Yes.
So I want us to talk about the journey of starting small, right, as a brand and a product that was just selling only online and going into COVID, because 2018 we closed to COVID, right?
Yeah.
Going into COVID where it seemed like everything in the world is going to be about online now.
Yeah.
Right? Some shops were closing down.
Yeah.
Because of COVID.
Yes.
And it seems like bricks and mortar was a thing of the past.
Yes.
And then when you went and you decided, I'm going to open a brick and mortar store.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. The journey from online to brick and, you know, mortar. And yeah, how did that come about?
All right. So online is necessary for testing, especially okay. when you're starting out. You want to, first of all, you're testing your target market. You're testing your quality. You do a lot of mistakes, right? Our quality at the time, and I'm so sorry for people who are, you know, the first people that buy. So I apologize, but the quality was not as it is today.
Mm. So they must come in by the second time.
They know now.
They know now. They
yeah.
know.
so online is necessary for starting out. You learn through online. But online is limited because it's a database.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, I always make an example with Kim Kardashian because
yes.
she's popular. She's got about 264,000 million followers.
On Instagram,
sorry,
yeah.
On million followers. Yes, on Instagram. That's a database that she's sitting with, right? So now when she posts something, she's posting to that audience. When you are starting out, you started at 10 with your friends, they get to 50, they get to 100. You are hoping, now with your online store, you are hoping out of the 100 that you've acquired in a month, if you are lucky, you get 200, right? At least 3 or 4 of them will buy.
Yep.
That's quite limiting.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So you have to spend money to grow the online, to create that database and make it larger. And when you do that, you also have to create credibility because there's so much risk online.
Yes.
There's counterfeits. There's a lot of things. You've seen things that I ordered this, I got this. So people
yes.
don't trust you. You
yes.
don't have that much credibility online.
Yes.
So AYAMI at the time, I understood that we are struggling because we're fighting counterfeits. One
mm-hmm.
of the things I wanted to eliminate or to minimize with having a physical store was to give the brand credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And just the audience online I mean, when you have a physical store, people come and buy without having seen you online. Some people are still not online. So brick and mortar is still quite big.
Yes.
The online is a very small part of our business, even today.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was the move. COVID was, well, it enhanced. We didn't suffer that much on COVID for us, even though things had closed. We introduced masks at the time.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And scarves, and that was really nice. Yeah. And remember, people were loving it, buying online because they couldn't go anywhere. So it worked in a way for us to, in terms of just building that brand credibility and growing the brand.
Yes.
But for the brand to really, for what we had in mind as a business, to say, we want people to experience the brand at its fullness.
Yes.
And we are understanding that we're competing with counterfeits and all other things that are
and
happening.
And competing online. With Louis Vuitton.
And Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
We want to give them a full brand experience. So having a store is necessary to give your customers a full brand experience. So you have to touch and feel.
Yes.
For them to trust. So most people, once they've been able to touch and feel the product, they are comfortable then buying yes. it online.
Yeah.
So it's a necessary channel, brick and mortar. And it's a yes. bigger channel than the online. Because
yeah.
people still want to experience the brand. They want to touch and feel before they commit, especially at the price point that we're asking our customers to pay. Yeah.
And you are very specific about the design of your store inside. I love the story. You just have to go into that a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Just like the customer experience part of it. Because, you know, these are the things that are so important when people are building brands and businesses, right? Intention, to just be intentional about what you are doing when you've identified your target market, right?
Yeah.
And you say, I want to sell to these people. And if you want to go premium, it's not just about you creating the product, and yes, your product might be good, but once you go the premium route, there's also an experience part of it.
Yes.
And I want us to touch on that a little bit, because you had a plan, and there's a way in which you designed your store, and I'll let you continue.
So now, moving in to a brick and mortar store, that's another big part. It was the biggest challenge of my life. I had this big vision of a brand. Now I'd already positioned as premium in my mind, and knowing that I wanted to be in Mall of Africa, therefore I needed to look a certain way. Again, having explained that my customers have been suffering, my target market has been going to dodgy places, I don't want them to now come at Mall of Africa and still find an unpleasant experience. In my brief to the people that designed the store for me, I was clear. Understand that our value proposition is this bold prints. So the store look and feel cannot compete. The offering cannot compete with the walls of the store.
Mm-hmm.
The walls must be enhancing and beautiful enough, but they must enhance the product, not to hide the product. That was one of the things. So the look and feel, the smell of the store, the music that is played at the store, the lights, we planned everything to the T. How do I want the store? How do I want people to experience the store? The sitting environment. Okay, there's even, okay, well, yes. Unfortunately, our Ocean store still doesn't have the chairs yet.
Yes.
We're only going to bring them.
They're coming.
They're coming. But, so even the experience, which while, because normally they're working with their partners, we want the partner to sit while the other one fits in. So those guys, we wanted them to have a full, beautiful experience shopping. This, I wanted to create a candy shop of African prints. Because we had already created about, at the time when we moved into a store, we had about 30 prints. We now have about 50.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted people to come in and say, wow, I want to take this. I also want this. I also want this. And that's the environment. And that's how our shoppers still today shop. When they come, they're like, I want to take this. I also like this. Everything is beautiful here. And I wanted to confuse our audience.
And so spend money. Buy more, spend money.
Yes.
Yeah. And with designing original stuff, IP, you know, comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is interesting for me because, you know, you think that when it's a local brand, you're not going to see counterfeits, right? Mm. So let's just talk about that in terms of just like the legalities and the IP and just some of the challenges that you've had to go through and how you've been able to fight those challenges. Win some, and which ones did you lose?
So up until we moved into the stores, I was bootstrapping. So I am using my money from corporate. I still have a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So when all this is happening, the counterfeits start kicking in. I'm only operating online, and then I'm finding big brands or designers
yes.
that are selling exactly this print that I'm wearing today. It's the most counterfeited print you can find, but the quality is obviously not there. So you would find these people, they are selling this. And me, I'm still struggling here. I'm selling a few items, and these big people are making money from this. So it's heartbreaking.
Mm.
Then you, at the time, I had to choose a battle. I have no money. I can spend my time fighting these people, or I can try and grow the brand. That was the choice I had to make, right? So because I did research at the time, I couldn't afford lawyers. I did research how much it's going to cost me. What in terms of the IP we have is a copyright. A copyright protects you when you've created something of the design.
Mm-hmm.
I can prove that it's my copyright because I have the works to prove that. But it doesn't stop criminals from counterfeiting and selling it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, right? So that was the challenge I was faced. That was the biggest challenge. It was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like I said, moving into a brick and mortar was able to eliminate that because people could see that actually it's hers or it's theirs. Because they can expand the print. It can be on swimsuits, it can be on bags, and these only sell them in this cheap material. It must be, you know, a counterfeit, right? That was the biggest thing. So the IP we have is a copyright. We are in the process of registering our prints, but because there are so many, we can't afford to register all of them at the same time. But even when you register, it doesn't stop people from copying. As they copy Louis Vuitton prints, they copy, you've seen, they copy everything.
Mm.
It's just that it's, for a small business, it's just that painful and heartbreaking that they copy while you're still in the early stages, and you know, and people
growing,
don't
yeah.
know. They really don't know that it's you know, they just wait innocently. We've got about 5 prints that are counterfeited in the market right now. I can spot them immediately.
Yes,
it's what we have to live with.
It's frustrating. Okay, and then I want us to talk about our favorite conversation. You and I have talked about this, you know, extensively, right? And it's a phase that I, you know, we're both in,
yeah.
you know, at the same time in our businesses when it comes to collaboration and investors.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, when I was starting my business, it's, and I think it came about because I was here at, you know, at Henley when my business
yeah.
was starting and I was doing my MBA. And I knew from the beginning that I was going to build a business that is investable, right? Because I knew that the power of collaboration can take, you know, your business to the next level.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite sayings is from Jay-Z, the rapper,
yeah.
right? The great philosopher.
Yeah.
He says, it's better to own 50% of
yes.
something than 100% of nothing.
Yes.
Right? It's my favorite saying. So
yes.
how has that journey been, you know, for you? And how did you go about it, right? To grow from being you and your business partner, because there's,
yeah.
you know, there was two of you
yes.
in the beginning.
Yeah.
And now your business has investors.
Yes. Absolutely.
Let's chat about that.
So remember, I'm starting out, I've got this idea, and then I'm fighting the counterfeits. I also want people to experience this brand at its fullness. Then I'm like, Zonke is my co-founder, my business partner that I started with. We need to move into a brick and mortar. So I had to convince her.
Yes.
And then we thought we'd get funding. So I went, there's this thing about, this is important. So I learned that retail funding is a myth in the beginning. That's why it felt like I was playing chess, because I didn't know. You find out as you go. So I then try and source funding early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that funding doesn't come until you make money.
Mm-hmm. You must be rich to get funded.
No, I didn't know. So that was really, it's very painful. So now you can imagine that each year I have got hope that I'm going to get the funding and then I can do this, and it's not happening. The realization happens. I'm like, no man, I've got these counterfeits. People are making so much money with our IP. So this thing is, I know it's big. I've always known it's big. If I position this and find people that can invest in the business, perhaps we can grow this. So we shared equity. Zong and I had to share equity in order to get money to move into these stores that you are seeing.
Yes.
there was no funding because you need to prove, you need to make money. We were too small at the time online. Like I said, online is a database thing.
Yes.
So you see people doing online, unless they've got over 50,000 following, it starts even then. Online is very different. It's more a marketing tool. Where you start making money is brick and mortar.
Yes.
That's our experience anyway. So we then like, no man, we're not going to get funding, so we need to bring people in.
Yes, and I just want us to break down so that everybody understands what do we mean when we say shared equity?
Oh, shared equity.
Shared equity. What does that mean?
So, say, for example, I'm the majority shareholder of this idea between me and you.
We own 50-50.
We own 50-50, yeah. We decide that this 50-50 is not taking us anywhere. We can't move into store with our 50-50. We're not getting the funding that we want. Perhaps it's better that we own 20-20 and bring people that can buy in.
So but you give up.
You give up.
Ownership.
Ownership of your business. And I don't want people to hang into, because I've experienced a lot of people that worry about that.
They want to own 100%.
So think about it. You're not going to, the business that AME is now, it wouldn't be possible without my investors. And I'm very grateful to them. They know that. It wouldn't be possible without them. So it was either I live as an owner, and you can see a number of, for example, I've seen the competition because I'm in this environment of clothing, right? A lot of people I can assess and see that they are not moving forward because they own this. They're just here. And they're going to probably remain there for because they... Maybe I don't know what the other, but I can just observe that if maybe they let go of some of the equity, they could make their idea much bigger.
And shared equity does not necessarily mean that people are giving you money sometimes as well, right?
In
some cases, you might need to just, give up equity and share equity and bring in people because they are coming in with certain skills. And there might not be a money exchange, or the money might be,
We've been blessed that we found people that immediately love the business as much as we do, that want to see it grow, and they were saying, well, with the vision that you guys are sharing, we're going to make this thing big. Mm-hmm. And they were able to put tangible money to make us go into the stores that you are seeing, to make us, even that didn't... That also, that's why I'm saying it's like playing chess. Once you've done that, you realize, I don't have working capital. I've opened these doors, now they're going to close. So that has been the biggest challenge. But I just want to say, I don't want people to think that this is gloom, that we've had a breakthrough. I'm not going to discuss my breakthrough. Can I keep it to myself?
Yes, yes, yes.
We've had a breakthrough, and obviously because of all the hard work we've put in, like I said, only when you're making money will they give you money.
Yeah. And this breakthrough, let's just to contextualize right with that. It's 7 years into the business.
7 years.
It's 7 years of hard work and, and finally.
Actually, in this period, the last 2 years was just building business so that it's fundable. Get the systems in place. Stop operating like a spaza.
Mm-hmm.
We put in the systems in place. We did our financials, our management, things are just, we just operate like a business. So when they then start to look at us, even though we're not at profitable level in terms of EBIT for them, they're like, hold on, this thing is legit, man. And they are running it like a proper business. So those things are also necessary in terms of getting funding.
Yes.
So you first have to build it up yourself. Just if anyone is starting, is still confused, you build it up with your own money. When you feel like you can scale it up, you lose equity, right? In losing equity, hoping that, in my case, it gave me money. It gives you money to make it what you want it to
scale,
be.
Yeah.
That now, with having that money, it enables you to put systems in place, because only when you've got systems in place and you're starting to look profitable will you get funding.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking in the... Perhaps I don't want to fully generalize because I'm not sure how other businesses are.
Yes.
This is in the retail environment and in building a brand. That's my experience. So that's the perspective that I'm talking on tonight.
I would say that it's probably to generalize, right?
Yeah.
It's generally how it works with a lot of industries and businesses in South Africa.
Yeah.
Right? It's you need to look like you're making money in order for you to make money. Basically.
Yes.
Yes.
For people to come and join you.
For people to come and join you. And that's why it's essential, even before you make the money, it's essential that the way that you brand yourself as well in the beginning, that you're serious about it, right?
Yes.
Things like, how does the business look like? All these things that, you know, the steps that you took in the beginning with the hope of I'm building a premium brand. So just having that mindset and just being ready from the beginning and understanding your vision and how far you're taking it helps you then with those decisions from the beginning. You might not have the money, but you start to implement little by little. And that's why then 7 years into your journey.
Yes.
And, you know, the years are different for everybody.
Yes.
7 years into your journey, then, you know, you look like that business that says, hey, we want to put money into it.
Yes.
But it's not because of only just the decisions you made a year ago, 2 years ago, but it's from the beginning when you said, I want this target market.
Yes. Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
I want to be there.
Yes,
you know, I want to move into a mall. This is the people that I want to target.
Yes.
My competition is Gucci and Louis Vuitton. It's all those little decisions.
Absolutely.
And just being intentional about those decisions from the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like they say, draw up a business plan, right? So when I review the business plan, most of the stuff that we've implemented is what I started within the business plan. Even though I wasn't checking the business plan while I was going, I was like, oh, let me go back. I wasn't doing that. But having that, the idea was set from the beginning. This is what we're going to build.
Mm.
This is the positioning of the brand, and this is our target market. Mm. So then everything moves towards that. That clear vision, everything aligns to it along the way.
I want to talk about the courage. So, and it's backtracking, right? So at what point, what was that conversation that you had with yourself where you go, this is the time for me to quit my job now. I am leaving and I'm going into this thing full time. Was it a conversation? Was it a situation? Or was it a plan that you had given yourself? How do you, you know, at what point do you make that transition to say goodbye to the paycheck and I'm entering the wilderness now full time?
Mine is a funny story though.
Yes.
Phew. So I didn't, for the first 4 years when we were still learning about the business, I was full-time employed, and that's what I encourage people to. Just hold on to that paycheck as long as you can, if you can continue this high trust, because you need it to be stable before moving in. Having known what I know now, that's what I would encourage people. But you do need to take a jump
at some point.
At some point,
yeah.
So for me, I went. So I wanted, even earlier on. Like early on, I tried to quit. Actually, I did quit my job. But when I just quit, I got another job. And you know, when you go to interviews and you're like, oh, I'm not interested in this, but let me hear them out.
And then they give
you the job.
And money.
And money.
And you've got school fees to pay.
And because so,
and a bond.
So I ended up working there for 4.5 years. And then I enjoyed that job. It was interesting. And it actually, that job also helped me because it specialized in trends and analysis and data, which is something that I picked, helped me a lot with the company. So while I was there towards the end, remember, I'm not living my purpose. I'd already determined my purpose. I started feeling like, what a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. Every time, like coming to work is so stressful because, as an example, I'm not gonna mention my last job.
Yes.
Assume my last job was selling boxes. I would say, oh, what is this selling boxes to do with my purpose? Every day it felt like that. You know, when you feel like, oh gosh, this is such a drag.
You're betraying yourself.
Yes. I'm wasting my time here. Then everything just becomes God pushes you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a spiritual person. So I felt like you get pushed. And so because I was already feeling that, I put in a deadline. I'm going to quit. But the funniest thing happened. I quit before my deadline. But I'm not going to mention how I quit. But it was like, phew, hi, this is it. I'm taking my stuff and I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
That's how. Because I had been planning the whole time that I'm quitting. And then this incident happened. It's like, oh, let me just take my things. This is it, you know. I was already left with about 3 months before my deadline that I had put for myself. Maybe I was going to postpone the deadline.
Who knows?
Who knows? But at that time, God said, all right, you've been wanting to jump here. There's no parachute. Go. That's what happened. So unfortunately, I jumped like that. But, well, it worked for me.
Yes.
In the end.
Yes.
I'm not saying that people should do that.
Yes.
But for me, it worked in the end. I had planned it. That's why it worked. Financially, I was in a better position to move.
And the business had been running.
The business had been running for
years.
But knowing what I know now, and I want to emphasize, I would have stayed longer. To make sure that I have acquired enough money to sustain me for at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Before the business is profitable.
Yeah.
If I had known that, I would have prolonged the process.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm on the other side. So it's
on the other side. Sometimes I wonder, though, you know, I mean, I did the opposite, right, of what you did as well. Where, you know, I left left full-time employment,
yes.
And then went straight. I mean, in the beginning, I didn't even have a business, right, when I had, you know, left work.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, you know, building, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah.
And there are times, right, that I've had, and I don't want to lie to you guys, I have had moments for years where I would sit there and then I would go to interviews, and then in the middle of the interview, I would sabotage the interview because I knew that I don't want this job.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm like, but I want to do it, but I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
And that would happen, you know, with me as well. But I mean, I look back, and honestly speaking, in my case, I wouldn't change anything about the journey because I feel like for me, that comfort of a paycheck, which is amazing, guys. Money is amazing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
money is great.
Yeah,
would have kept me. I would have chickened out.
Away.
There is no way that I would have stayed in the jungle.
Mm.
You know, that we are in, and sorry, I'm calling it the jungle. I shouldn't call it the jungle. It's wonderful to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
There's no way that I would have stayed in this heaven, you know, that we are in.
Yeah.
If I had that comfort, I think I would have, there are days where I just would have thought, this is not, you know, worth it for me because you go up and down.
So again, I think the timing is, it's this thing is like a calling. And maybe that's why we are able to stay on it for so long and be able to see it succeed, you know?
Yes.
So, like I said, there is that thing that pushes you when you're not living your purpose. You feel like you're underutilized. You feel like you could do more where you are at. Nothing can stop you.
Yes.
When the time has come for you to move.
Yes.
So and that's the thing about it. You know, I am out of here. Nothing's going to stop me. I actually don't. In fact, the money that you, that it doesn't become at the time. It's not a big deal.
It's not.
You don't think, no, you don't, because you are like, I'm just going to go and live my purpose now. I'm so tired. This is not for me. I know what I want in life.
Yes.
So that's what should push you. When you feel this thing is setting your soul on fire, you are unable to sleep at night, then go do it.
Yes.
And don't use other people's experiences, because journeys are not the same for you to say, oh, this person didn't succeed, this person. Just walk the journey, but in terms of what I would say, the thing that you need to survive in the journey and to succeed as an entrepreneur, the journey itself will teach you grit. You will learn and you'll be shaped to be courageous, to have strength, to wake up every day and show up and be consistent, even if you don't want to show up.
Yes.
The journey will shape you, right? Look at it like it's your calling. You need to do this. It has to be done. You need to have confidence. You need to have confidence in yourself, because there are days when things aren't working out. And even your family and your close friends are like, oh man, are you sure you shouldn't be going for interviews?
Not even that. They start sending you jobs on WhatsApp.
Oh, I know. I actually know that.
Yeah, they start sending you jobs, which is like, you know, I just thought this might suit you.
Actually.
Just in case you might be looking, then you know, oh, they realize that I'm broke.
Actually. So you need to be very confident. You also confident in terms of selling yourself, because being an entrepreneur, you have to sell yourself all the time. You have to sell yourself to investors, to your customers. You just always have to, for people to believe in your brand, they need to believe in you. So you need to be the person that speaks for your brand. You need to be confident.
Yeah.
Now, where your family now start sending you messages and jobs is, you need to be confident in the idea. Why did I do this? Is this worth it? Believe that all the time. If you start believing your own idea, remember, they don't know this idea, they got it from you. So now if you're like, I also like quit now, I mean so what do you expect from people to do? So you need that. And then the other thing, which is also very, and we spoke about it downstairs, is faith. Entrepreneurship is about faith. And I'm going to give you examples. There are many, many, many steps that I've taken without knowing that I'm going to succeed. But I believed. The main one is bringing in investors. When I didn't know that I'm not going to have working capital enough and I'm going to struggle, but I brought them in and they believed in me. Now I have these people sitting in my shoulders that have put money on me. I'm not trying to run a pyramid scheme. Yes. I think this idea is going to work. But I had faith that this is going to work. And by grace of God, it worked. So if you understand faith, then you will understand why it worked. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you need to have faith. The journey, if you don't have faith, let me tell you, you will have people that say, all right, so if this doesn't work out, what are you going to do? Ish, I don't have plan B, and I've already put so much here, right? So you look like you don't think your things properly, but your things are well thought. You probably have a plan B. For me, I give them, I'm such an optimist, I'm a positive person, so I tell my friends, I do have a plan B. I actually, if it doesn't work out, I will decide then. I thought about it, but I don't focus on it. Mm. I'm not a person that focuses on analyzing the negative, because you won't be able to move. That's what stops most people from starting, is because you're analyzing the foilers. If this doesn't work out, then you're not going to move. You're never going to jump, because you are stuck here at the negatives, right? What if it works out?
Mm. Yeah, well. You remind me of that saying that says, what if I fall?
Exactly.
And then it says, but what if you fly?
Exactly. Yeah. The last point that I want to make in terms of those things that you need in the journey of entrepreneurship is a strong network.
Yes.
That one for me.
Because again, let's go to the whole, where do you meet these investors? Right?
Well, let's talk about that as well. So some of them, where my from Gibbs, so I'm from Gibbs.
Yes, that's fine.
Yeah, so I'm from so they're from my classmates, that's the word, right? So they're from same class as me, and there was a time where I felt like, yo, I should have added more friends because now I need to pitch to other people I don't have. But you want real friends, authentic friends, people that can trust you. Mm-hmm. And your network trusts you because you are a trustable brand, or a trusted brand. So you need to have the network, it's family, it's friends.
Yep.
Even your family and friends, they will invest in you. If they trust you, your whole life they've known you, this is what you deliver. They will then find it easier to give you money because you are a trusted brand.
Mm-hmm.
The people that you meet in this class, in your class, when you befriend them authentically and you are yourself, they obviously will be attracted to walk with you, whatever journey you bring them on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a network that I've worked. But like I'm saying, at some point I felt like, yo, I didn't make enough friends.
Enough friends, yeah.
Many times where I didn't have anyone else to pitch my idea to, who can invest, who has money, I felt like, ish, I wish I had made more friends. So the strong network for me carries you. The network gives you money. The network buys your items even when no one is buying. They are the first one to tell you how nice it is. They'll come and buy.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them won't necessarily invest in your business, but they will support you with small things, words of encouragement.
Encouragement, yeah.
I want to highlight my investors, incredible people that believed in the brand for me. That's a network that I attracted along the way. But also when they started seeing the brand online, they believed in it.
Yes.
I don't know where this brand would be without those people.
Yes.
Those people put money in the business to make it work. They contribute before we got our breakthrough. They just believed in the brand.
So and you
need work.
Because people, you and I know this, people invest in people.
Absolutely.
So yes, you build this incredible business and it's a brand and it's this, but...
Yes,
and it's great and it's got potential, right? All the line items and the spreadsheets and the needs to make sense.
Yes.
But people invest in people.
Absolutely. The confidence that I was talking about and the passion.
And the passion that they see and the way that you present yourself.
Yes.
And, you know, someone had posted something, this was on LinkedIn a few weeks ago, and said, you must be the type of person who mentions people in important rooms.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, Sure, you must also be the type of person who's worth mentioning, hey?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, and because I had just had that experience as well, where I was in a place where I felt like with my business, I don't know where this is going, right?
Yeah.
And it was a person that not necessarily because they thought, I mean, they know that the business is amazing and it's great, but it was more about them looking at me and going, I know that you've got potential.
Yes.
But that's not because of just the fact that I was born that way.
Yeah.
Right? It's the work that you put in to say, I am going to be a dependable person. I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to be the person that transparent and trustworthy and present myself in such a manner that I'm worth mentioning in rooms.
Yes.
Right? It's important that you become that person that is worth mentioning in rooms as well. And it's up to you.
Yes. So the strong network, the investors, for me, you need that. It's not a journey you can do alone.
Yes.
Entrepreneurship is not a one-man show. So if you carry a vision, as a vision carrier, obviously I feel all the pain and the suffering. I'm the one who, everyone else can, it's like owning a child, the mother of the child. Everyone else will just give you the baby and they will run away. That's how it feels when you are the vision owner. But you still have the family members. Right? That's how it is. You need that support structure with you because it's really easy, a very hard journey on your own. I cannot imagine, I would not be here without my business partner, Uza Uzonke, the founder, the co-founder, and without my investors, the business wouldn't be what it is today. So I'm absolutely very grateful to have found people that believed in me and in the vision.
Yes.
It's not a one-man show.
It's not a one-man show with that power of collaboration. And we were talking about this earlier that, and I was saying to you that I wouldn't be in business still if I didn't have my business partner.
Yeah.
Because, and I was saying to you, I would have never survived the depression.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's something called entrepreneurship depression. No one is immune to it. Everybody goes through it.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's the wilderness out there.
Yeah.
But what I found was that when I am down, she would pick me up.
Yes.
When she's down, we have moments where it's just like I could be dysfunctional for extended periods of time.
When and I realized that negative
and I realized that during this period the business would have gone down.
Yeah.
Right? And she would hold it together.
Mm. Yeah.
And then there's times as well where she's just like, I'm like, yo, she's not here.
Yeah.
But then you don't go and be like, hey, what? You know, you hold it.
Yeah.
And you pull each other up.
Yes.
And that for me is the power.
Yeah.
Really of collaboration is having those people
you need that
you know that pick you up. You pick each other up because it's up and down.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be, yes, we're saying be confident. I'm still yet to meet a person who's confident every day 100%. I'd love to be that person.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Right? I have my days where confidence is on at all-time high.
Yeah.
And then I have moments where rejection happened and then confidence is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
And I have to, you know, pull myself up, you know, from rock bottom.
I also want to say that perhaps the hardships mostly we experience is on the startup phases, right?
Yes.
So remember that businesses now where you guys normally would work are fully functional businesses. They started like us, right? So what we're merely sharing now, the hardships we're sharing, is because the businesses are starting out. So it's not as scary, it's not as bad. It's just the first 5 years for 100 years of legacy, look at it that way.
Yes.
That's 5 years of torture, pain, whatever, but for 100 years of legacy. So it's not all bad. It's just that the starting up, where there's no money, where you need support, that's the hard part about it. Otherwise, once you've gone through that and you now no longer a startup, then you would be like a normal functioning business with normal business challenges, but not as equivalent to starting up.
Yes.
So it's not all the jungle.
It's not
the jungle is only in the beginning.
In the beginning. Like, I don't know. I think that the jungle is always there, but it's just there at different levels.
Probably.
You know, I was listening to this conversation with Adrian Goy and someone. Adrian Goy is the owner and founder of Discovery. Mm. And I just realized that more than anything, to want the things to be easy and looking forward to that moment where it's all smooth is a trap.
Yeah.
Right. I for me, I learned that part of the success is the resilience. It's just knowing that the good goes along with the bad. And there is just no way that the one lives without the other.
So, you know, the grit I spoke about.
Yeah. So,
instead
of hoping that, one day it's going to be all good. It's just saying, I am here now. Mm. Is it still working out? Mm. Are we moving forward? Yes, we are. When the bad happens, you take it, you deal with it. You celebrate the highs, And then when the lows come, because I learned that, and I know this, that 30 years from now, I'm still going to be talking about the fact that, oh, it's a jungle out there. But you know what? It's I'm actually different. Comfortable.
Yeah.
Now I've become comfortable with it. Yeah. Where before I used to look forward to when I get out of the jungle, when I leave the jungle.
Yeah.
But I've realized that leaving the jungle is I must get a job.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I hear you.
Yeah, if I want to leave the jungle, I must get a job. Yeah. I must decide, do I want to be in the jungle or do I want to live in the zoo?
Yeah.
I don't want to live in the zoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I am not meant. Yeah, I'm not meant, to live in the zoo. I am not a zoo animal. I'm a jungle. Yes, I mean, so think about
free.
It. And an animal that lives in the jungle must always hunt.
Yeah.
No one ever comes and gives you food and say, do you know what I'm saying? So that's what I've learned, that you know what, it is a jungle and it is okay, and this is the life that I've chosen, and I'm comfortable that I'm always going to hunt. My hunting will be different.
So
I'll be hunting for different things at different levels.
Exactly. So what I want to say, the first early years, they teach you how to hunt.
Yes.
So that you are comfortable in long term.
Yes.
That's how I'm seeing it.
Yes.
So the grit that you need to have, because you're coming from a place of comfort.
Yeah.
Then you're experiencing the hardship because you've never felt this hardship.
Yes.
Then you get used to the hardship. Then anything that comes after now is much easier to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even the challenges in the business, you are able to manage them better.
Better, yes.
Then it becomes a sustainable business. I just think it's that way. That's how I'm seeing it.
And it becomes the building yourself part. Right. In my case, it's been 8 years that you get used to the challenges. But how I've gotten used to the challenges is that I started investing in building myself mentally.
Yeah.
Right. It's building myself physically. I have not been sick for a very long time, and I'm very proud of that, because I invest in my health.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. In terms of just eating healthy, working out, because
conscious.
I realized that I really just can't afford to be out for 3 months and sick, right? I just, you know, I can't afford it and don't have the desire to do that either.
Yeah.
So it is that investing in my health, in working out, in eating healthy. I would love to drink wine every day, but I don't.
Yeah.
Right? I only drink it once a month because it's not good for me to drink every day. It's just knowing things like that.
Yeah.
But it's also investing in my mental health,
which
for me is an everyday practice, right? You know, I've got my own little practices that I do to say I'm going to invest in my mental health every day. And I've learned that what happens is, especially when I'm investing when things are good, is that when the hard times come, they don't find me empty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
They fill your tank with
positive. Exactly. Like, you know, the hard times come, but you don't find me empty.
Yeah.
Right? It draws from something because I keep filling it up and I keep filling it up. So, and that's the thing that I learned in the journey. And how I've, you know, built my resilience over time.
So perhaps for me is the little wins along the way.
Yes.
So the little wins along the way, they fill my tank so that by the time this hardship comes, I remember how good it was.
Yes.
When this happened. So the little wins, like, oh, we opened our first store. That was like a big deal.
Yes.
And the challenge is, oh, we no longer have working capital.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. What now? So I was still high that I've got this. I just now need to maintain it, right?
Yes.
And then the second one is the second store. How do I now maintain it? So the little wins, they help you fill your tank. That's my observation.
Yes.
And then so when the hardship comes, you still feel and you're still on the high that you continue because you've had the successes. So they're things that keep you going. It's not like you are insane. There's no wins at all. There are things that keep you going to make you sure that you're getting to your goal. You can see that my goal is coming. I've got the little wins. It's just that right now I'm struggling. I don't know how to navigate the now.
Yes.
And you need to master that through obviously being healthy. The mental health, I think one of the biggest things that entrepreneurship demands is a strong mental health. You need to be, you cannot be anxious. You're going to end up in hospital all the time. Depressed. You need a very strong mental health. So you need, again, faith for me has been the biggest player in that that makes my mental health, that I know this thing is going to happen. I can hear, obviously, when you get people telling you negative things in a way, you need to, that's where the confidence comes in, that's where your faith has to has to come in, to keep yourself sane.
Yes.
Yeah. Mental health for me,
important. Filtering things.
Yes.
I filter the news. Like, I learned in the process. I was just
like,
I'm just going to have to filter the news, because every time the economy did something, for me, it immediately translates to sales. right? And I'm going,
please,
oh my goodness.
You're talking about
Know, like immediately, and I just thought, you know what? Following this economic news every day, it's not helping.
Load shedding.
Because every time something happens, it's just for me immediately, I'm just like, now this means that.
Yes.
Now that means this. So just filtering, you know, certain things.
Yeah. And taking probably one win and one step at a time, that's also important. For you, you know, when they say don't eat the elephant all at
once. One go.
So you just like small steps and small wins and celebrate those. And they're all going to build up into that one giant thing at the end.
At the end.
You can't be like, because you're going to be overwhelmed. You can't be like, oh, this problem is too much now. You're focusing on this big problem. What if you are able to just solve this thing, just this now, and then maybe tomorrow you'll solve this other one?
Yes.
Don't say, oh, I'm going to try and do it all at once. Then you're going to overwhelm yourself.
You're
going to have a mental breakdown, a number of things. Then you need yourself. You can't afford, as an entrepreneur, you can't afford to be off sick.
For 3 months.
Literally, for off sick. If I'm... like, if I'm the main person that makes the major decisions, and all, like a CEO of the company.
Yep.
Yes, you've got people that can help you, but there's a decision that needs you.
Yes.
At the end of the day, there's this one that needs you. Now you are not available. What now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for that's a small business, that's so real because you don't have a lot of staff. You need to be present and to make that decision.
To make those decisions. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
Your time.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad that we finally had this conversation.
Thank you so much.
Years in the making for me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For thinking of me.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me and for hosting me.